Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hort, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Life Changes edition, as we look at some big changes on the Bengals offensive line with the start of training camp looming in a little more than a week. Coming up, I'll go one-on-one with Clint Bowling, who announced his retirement on Monday after being one of the Bengals' most reliable players for the past eight seasons. That news comes a few weeks after we learned that first-round draft pick Jonah Williams will miss the season with a shoulder injury. I'll talk to Dave Lapham about the impact of those losses and what the Bengals are likely to do on the left side of their offensive line. Those conversations are straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since the National Comedy Center. I grew up near Jamestown, New York, best known for being the hometown of Lucille Ball, and on a recent visit to see my folks, I checked out the National Comedy Center. It opened last year, and it's a high-tech, state-of-the-art, interactive museum celebrating the history of comedy. So, if you happen to be near Jamestown in the southwest tip of New York State, be sure to check it out. You won't be disappointed. Now, let's get to football.
We're sad to see him go because he was a great player, and we value those experienced veteran players, and he's done it so well for a long time, but I know that they're at peace with the decision, and so happy for them, happy for their family, and he'll get a chance to move on with the rest of his life.
That was Bengals head coach Zach Taylor reacting to Monday's announcement that offensive lineman Clint Bowling is retiring for medical reasons. A few days after last season ended, Bowling felt pain in his right leg. It turned out to be a blood clot, and shortly after that, Clint learned that the blood clot had traveled to his lungs. That explains why he did not take part in the Bengals' summer workouts, and after talking to doctors and thinking about his wife and two daughters who are both under the age of two, Bowling decided to call it quits. I spoke to him about that decision and his fine NFL career. Clint, you told us you've been playing football since sixth grade, so this will be the first time in your adult life you've not been part of a football team in the fall. Is it kind of hard to believe that's going to be the case?
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty surreal feeling. You know, really trying to wrap my head around, what am I going to do? But at the same time, you know, it's exciting to move on to the next venture. Football is was a big part of my life, but it's not, you know, who I am. And to be able to figure out, you know, what I'm going to move on to next in life is it's exciting.
It's such a sport of routine. You have to be in certain places at certain times. Your schedule is dictated for you, especially once training camp begins. Now, I suppose, other than, appointments with your daughters and so mm-hmm. forth, you can determine what you want to do on a daily basis.
Yeah, you know, just hopefully still be a little regimented just from getting up with the kids, dropping them off and taking care of them, doing whatever I need to do with them. And then I guess just kind of catching some tee times after that. I got to be on time for those. So that's the plan right now. And just kind of take this fall in and hopefully get to travel some with my family and just relax for a little while.
Will you be one of these guys that drops a bunch of weight after your playing career?
I hope so. I'd like to start working on it and we'll see what I get down to, or if I get down to anything. But I hope so. I like to, you know, I've always enjoyed lifting and working out, and like to continue doing that. And definitely will continue to do that, just because to kind of keep myself motivated is to, you know, stay in the gym, stay working out. And at the same time, you kind of get that, you know, in the gym, you still got that locker room atmosphere with some trainers and that kind of thing, guys that I've been working out with and training since I was in high school.
We're visiting with Clint Bowling. In the Bengals news release that announced a retirement, Mike Brown had a quote in there that said he never got the credit he deserved. Did you see that, and do you agree?
Just part of being an offensive lineman is sometimes you just have to accept that. And like I talked about earlier, just about, you know, coming in and working every single day, if you can definitely be upset about certain things. But at the end of the day, it's just about doing your job and making the guys around you better. And that's what offensive lineman's all about sometimes.
A 2011 draft class worked out pretty well. Green, Dalton, Bowling.
Yeah, it was a good group of guys. You know, anytime you can have – three starters on the offense are on the offense like that. It's a you got to think it was a good draft, and for us to come in and as a team we were able to go to 5 playoff games in a row. Obviously would have liked to have gone a different way, but ultimately it was fun coming in with those guys and experiencing this city and team together.
Have you heard from your former teammate, Andrew Whitworth, and is he busting your balls that he's still playing and you are retiring?
I actually told Andrew a few days ago, I tried to talk to a couple friends, and, he was one of the guys that I talked to before everything, but, they wouldn't surprise me if he somehow played another 2 or 3 years. But what he's been doing in L.A. has just been incredible. The way that he's been able to continue his career and play as long as he has, it's just, it's unbelievable to watch.
You had to practice against Geno Atkins in college and in the pros, so we know what a headache that must have been. But how about opposing players? Who did you consider to be the best guys you ever faced?
There's a lot of different guys that come to mind. There's guys in our division like Cameron Hayward, who's just a really physical player that doesn't take plays off. I mean, every single play, he's given it his all. There's some guys in Baltimore, some Suggs and some of those nose guards that are really, hard to move. Obviously other guys that, some premier guys like J.J. Watt are obviously all really good players. So, I mean, when you go into the NFL game, you know every single week you're going to be in for a challenge.
What guys talk the most that you faced?
Honestly, I never really talked much. I just went about there. Every now and then you come across, but there's never anybody that stands out to me, just because I tried to keep to myself. My theory was I just never wanted to make anybody more mad than they were. So,
well, now you don't have to face the Steelers anymore. How do you feel about them?
You know what? I mean, that was always a fun place to play, but just to finish my career here, I mean, going to always be fun cheering for the Bengals, and anytime they're playing Pittsburgh, it's always going to be a physical game, and game that I'm always going to be pulling for the Bengals for.
Was there a welcome to the NFL moment your rookie year?
Just the interactions and meeting the guys. Like I said, there's so many different personalities in the locker room and meeting so many different people. It was just a unique experience. I don't know if there was a particular moment, but maybe when I was walking through the parking lot and I saw all the different cars, that was probably the first thing that stood out.
Is there a game, or are there a couple of games that stand out as your favorites?
One that we won, I would definitely say, would be the end of the season, 2017, playing at Baltimore, having to switch positions, play out at tackle, and winning on the last play of the game like that on fourth down was just an awesome way to end the season. And then obviously there were some disappointing playoff games, but those playoff atmospheres, it was just, you can tell it's cranked up another notch. I mean, you play football for 16 weeks and then you go play a playoff game, and it's just a different atmosphere. The crowd's a different atmosphere, the intensity level is different. And it was just always fun kind of experience it football at just the highest level.
Even when I asked you about wins, you mentioned losses. Did the losses hurt more than, you savored the wins?
I would say so, just because those are the games that truly, that you stand out like, oh, man, if I just did this differently, if we did this differently as a team, then this would have happened. And, you kind of relish in those moments a little bit more than some of the wins. And that's just, some of those losses just stick in your mind a little bit more than the wins do sometimes.
If Andy didn't break his thumb in 2015, is that the season that you think might have ended in a very special way?
Yeah, we were a great football team that year. We played a lot of good ball. And, there's a ton of what ifs throughout my career, throughout the teams that I've been on. So it's always, kind of tough to feel like, if we just did this differently. But at the end of the day, it's, had a played on a lot of good teams.
What do you love, or what did you love about this sport?
Like I said earlier, I think just the camaraderie, the 53 guys in this locker room, all the unique and different personalities, and, coming together as a football team and seeing where, how guys got here, where they're from, and their life story. It's just, there's so many unique stories, and just to hear them all, it was always fun to, you know, pre-practice, post-practice, guys joking around was always fun.
Do you feel good when you wake up after 8 years in the NFL, or are there still some aches and pains depending on if it's going to rain or whatever?
You know, it just depends. For the most part, you know, I feel well right now, and just excited to move on and figure out the next step.
Sounds like the blood clot issue that popped up at the end of the season, at least briefly, was kind of a scary situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just, you know, anytime you have to go to a hospital, you know, you never know exactly what's going on, and just trying to figure out what exactly was happening and wrap my head around it was tough. But like I said, you know, sometimes there's things that are bigger than football, and, you know, you just have to make that decision sometimes.
Paul Brown used to famously tell people or tell players at the end of their career, it's time to find your life's work.
Yeah.
How much thought have you given to your next venture of coaching, broadcasting, business? What are you thinking?
You know, we'll just really try to figure that out this fall. Fortunately, I'll be in a position to where I don't have to jump into anything I don't want to right now. So just to kind of take some time and start networking and meeting people and really figuring out exactly what's next is, you know, something that will start right now, I think.
You've done well financially, so you probably don't have to work again the rest of your life, but I don't picture you as sitting on the couch a couple years from now.
No, I think, you know, for guys to stay active, like we talked about, football, at the end of football is just the beginning of your life. Football is a big part of my life, but, you know, to move on and stay busy and stay active, you know, it's going to be exciting to see what that next step is, but you know, you absolutely, I feel like, have to stay busy as a person and challenge yourself sometimes.
Training camp begins in less than 2 weeks. I'm assuming you're not going to miss that too much.
No, it's, you know, it's been unique. It's a unique feeling knowing that you're not going to have to put the pads on again and, you know, fight your way through another football practice when you're about 8 or 9 days in. You know, it's something that one of the things I won't miss.
You had a great career. I've always considered you to be one of the real unsung heroes on this team, in the locker room, on the offensive line, just a total solid as a rock pro. Congratulations on 8 great years. Thanks for all the time you've given us, and best of luck with Kelly and the girls.
Awesome. Thank you guys very much for the past few years. Thanks.
Bowling started all 16 games in 4 out of the last 5 seasons, but he wasn't only reliable. According to Pro Football Focus, he was the Bengals' highest-rated offensive lineman among their starters last year. The news of Bowling's retirement comes roughly 3 weeks after we learned that rookie Jonah Williams, the 11th pick in this year's draft, and the team's likely starter at left tackle, will miss the entire season with an injured left shoulder. I discussed those developments with my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, the roughly a month between the end of the mandatory minicamp and the start of training camp is supposed to be quiet, but that was hardly the case for the Bengals this year as they lost a couple of offensive linemen. Let's start with number one draft pick Jonah Williams, who will miss the entire season with a torn labrum in his left shoulder. Let's start with the injury itself. What will that mean to him going forward?
My understanding is that the severity of the tear can be repaired readily, and that it shouldn't be a hindrance. And in, as with all surgeries, every body reacts differently, and then its amount, and then it amounts to how committed are you to rehab. Knowing him a little bit, I think he'll be a maniacal rehab guy. I think that's what they'll probably have to say, all right, well, they'll hold him back a little bit. I think he'll try to do maybe too much too soon, if anything. It won't be. If the rehab is not great, it won't be for lack of effort. So I think he's going to be fine, and you know, it is that left shoulder, which is his outside shoulder at left tackle, where you know a lot of the heavy traffic takes place. So you have to make sure that it's back and it's at full 100% before you're out there trying to do something. So I think they made the decision wisely. You know, let's let this year. You know, take place in terms of him getting ready for the second year of his NFL career. And I think it's going to be a long one. I think he's going to have a long NFL career.
I think a lot of people want to know, how does that happen at a mini camp with limited hitting?
Yeah, sometimes you can just get caught. You know, you're still doing, you know, ET, end penetrate, tackle twist, tackle penetrate, end twist, those stunts and those kind of things. And sometimes you can just get caught, you know, get your arm caught awkwardly, you know, amongst a mass of bodies and just be, you know, put in a position where your arm and your shoulder isn't going the way that it normally should go, you know, and so that can happen. That can happen, you know, at any time in the game of football. So unfortunately, and you know, of course, there was a lot of concern because Saban is known as the guy that beats his players up. And was this an injury that he had at Alabama? And it was a lingering injury. And in today's high tech medical world, they can determine from blood samples around the injured area, and by looking at the imaging, they're so specific they can tell if it's old injury or new injury. And this was a new injury that was sustained, you know, probably during those mini camps.
Lapp, it's the fifth consecutive year that the Bengals' number one draft pick will have an injury-plagued rookie season. Billy Price, John Ross, William Jackson, Cedric Obwehi were the previous four. It's pretty ridiculous. I mean, it's bad luck.
It is, you know, and when they drafted Cedric Obwehi, you know, he had played in that bowl game with the blown out knee and played the whole second half with that torn ligament in his knee, and then had surgery to repair it. I mean, his muscles, his quads and hamstrings were so strong that, you know, he could play and finish the game. So, yeah, it's crazy. But a lot of those were shoulder and chest problems. So I guess maybe the next time you draft a first rounder, make sure they don't have any shoulders or chest. You don't have to worry about injuries to those body parts. I mean, it is crazy. The odds of that happening as often as it's happened in consecutive years to the Bengals are staggering. Yeah. Staggering. It's ridiculous.
The last Bengals first round draft pick to play all 16 games was Kevin Zeitler, but he was not their first overall pick that year. Dre Kirkpatrick was, and he only played 5 games that year. The last time the Bengals' number one overall pick played all 16 games was 2007.
Wow.
Leon Hall. There have been guys that have played 15, including Tyler Eifert, but the last guy to play all 16 who was their first pick in the draft was Leon Hall.
That's incredible. You know, when you I mean, obviously they're drafting the first round for a reason. And you know, if you miss on first round picks due to lack of ability or injury, it can set you back a long period of time. And fortunately, these were, you know, in a lot of cases injuries for that rookie year, but then they came back and played. Although, you know, guys like Tyler and John Ross have had injury-plagued careers so far. So you just never know. There's no guarantees. It is what it is in terms of full contact sport. You have 100% injury risk every single snap, and I guess these are good examples of it.
Now the more recent offseason news, Clint Bowling's decision to retire after dealing with a blood clot in the offseason. Not a shocker when we saw him standing off to the side during the various mini camps and training camp or pre-training camp off-season program. It was clear that something was going on and that this was at least a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking a medical scenario like a blood clot in the leg that was traveling to the lung, you know, now you're talking about, you know, hospital trips, which he had, and now you're talking about a guy's health that is much more than just the game of football, particularly with a wife and a 20-month and a 5-month-old daughters. So it was not, I guarantee you, it was not easy for Clint Bowling to make the decision he made. And the fact that he was up here for those mini camps just to go through the mental part of getting ready for the game of football, he had not made a total decision yet, but he was leaning toward probably the decision that he made here today for probably a couple of months, I bet. He'd been thinking about it and talking about it. You make a trip to the hospital, it's gonna make you thinking about, you know, what am I going to do when football's over? Because it looks like it's going to be over here.
How big of a blow is it?
It's significant because in today's NFL, versatility in the offensive line is a big deal. Because last year, think of how many times the Bengals only activated 7 offensive linemen because they had a Clint Bowling that could play multiple spots. That's why, to me, Trey Hopkins has a chance to still make this football team because, like Clint, he's very intelligent. And he's very versatile. And coaches like intelligence and versatility in their football players. So I think he might be the guy, and he may not necessarily be a starting lineman, but he's a guy that could be the seventh, one of the seven guys active that can you can plug in anywhere and finish a game with and not be embarrassed about it. He can go and execute and finish games or play, you know, two or three straight games depending on injury or whatever the case may be. So you're looking for, you know, somebody to plug in to that, you know, the intelligence, the versatility, but he had the experience now too. So he's this term pro is thrown around a lot. I do it probably too much. He is, you know, Webster's, look it up, the picture for Pro's Pro, Clint Bowling's head is right there because, like Mike Brown said, you know, he's probably underappreciated. He didn't get enough credit for what he did for this organization. And he never toots his own horn. I mean, he doesn't say – Clint Bowling doesn't say crap if he has a mouthful of it, you know. I mean, he's one of those kind of guys that just goes out and wants to be part of a team and play. And that they're going to miss that. They're going to miss what he contributes on the field, but – young, like when he came in the league, Witt showed him the way. This is how you operate as a professional offensive lineman in the National Football League. Witt moves on. Bowling, when young guys came in, that's the guy to watch. Everything he does, you do what he does, you're going to be fine. And nobody plays forever, so, you know, there's going to be another guy that has to step up and fill that role, and there will be, but it's a role that's going to have to be filled, and I think that's the that's the role that people, I don't think, realize, you know, that he filled as well as he did.
With Jonah Williams out for the year, Cordy Glenn kicks out and plays left tackle. What's the battle look like going into training camp at left guard?
Yeah, boy, it's wide open. Like Zach said, there's 13 linemen that are going to be going into training camp still. And, when you look at it, you think, all right, well, not only there's two things you have to think about. Who's going to be the left guard? And who's the third tackle? I mean, they have two tackles, and, you know, a lot of Bengaldom isn't real happy with either one of the two tackles they have. Who's the third tackle? Do you have to wait till the final cutdown of the last cuts in the National Football League before your third tackle shows up? Do you have to make a training camp trade? They've made training camp trades before. You may have, depending on how it unfolds at camp, if nobody's showing. I think you can identify your five best linemen, and somebody will end up playing that, you know, that left guard spot. But then the roster depth is the key again. And, you know, Hopkins, I think with his long arms, could kick out there and not embarrass himself at the tackle position. You know, you've got other guys that have done it. Jerry went out there when he was with the Dolphins, played a couple of games at the tackle position. There are other guys that have played the tackle spot, but not a whole lot of reps, you know, at that tackle position. So, you know, left guard and third tackle, those are the ones that are going to be under the microscope and are going to be, you know, honed in on and focused in on big time.
Is it Christian Westerman's job to lose?
You know, Christian Westerman physically is the guy. Mm-hmm. But is he going to go where he's supposed to go and be there when he's supposed to be there and do what he's supposed to do? Those are the keys. And, you know, that's why Trey Hopkins is a guy that, as a, you know, I projected myself as a line coach, and like Coach Turner's like, man, you know, do I want to go with the guy that I physically might, you know, really overpower some people? But key time on the road, screaming fans, you got a beast in front of you. All of a sudden, you know, you might have done it on the grease board okay, but boy, now you have to operate under pressure. And can you live with that potential mistake? Or do you want the guy that you know no matter what? Now, physically, he may not do as great a job as the other guy in terms of movement and things like that, but he's going to be on the right guy. He's going to be doing the right thing. So those decisions are going to be very interesting for the coaching staff to make. But I think this is the year that Westerman, hopefully, you know, steps up. But Westerman's situation, Dan, you think about it, his issue is, you know, the mental part of the game. Well, this will be his third line coach in 3 years. New techniques, new systems, new assignments. That's hard. That's hard for anybody, particularly a guy that struggles with that type of thing. So, you know, the thing is everybody's starting at ground zero from that standpoint because it's new system, new staff, and all that. So Westerman's starting at ground zero with all parties. Hopefully he picks it up as fast as the others do.
is the big thing with new line coaches and picking up their system, not necessarily how you specifically, you know, set up your hands and your feet to block a specific guy, but how you handle the twists, the stunts, the approach that each line takes to handling that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there are different techniques. You know, guys, some coaches teach different hand placements and different torques that you might try to utilize and those types of things, aiming points. But yeah, the twists and the stunts, and sometimes, you know, protections are different in terms of terminology and then responsibility within the terminology. So it's like, you know, if you're a guard and you're an uncovered guard and you have a linebacker, and then, you know, sometimes I gotta make sure I only have that inside linebacker. If he doesn't come, I gotta help inside. On this protection, if the inside linebacker doesn't come, I gotta check outside of the outside linebacker. So, you know, it's like you gotta keep it all straight, and you have to keep all the terminology straight. And sometimes guys flat out brain cramp. You know, some guys, you know, master it quickly. Clint Bowling was a guy that mastered it quickly. I mean, he would adjust, you know, to new systems, new techniques, new coaches, no issue. Other guys, it takes a while.
One of the big things we always look at the beginning of training camp are the injured guys coming back and how quickly they get back on the field. So A.J. Green, Carl Lawson, Ryan Glasgow, Tyler Eifert, Darquez Denard, that's going to be a big focus when the guys get to rolling in Dayton.
It is. It's going to be a big focus. And all these guys, you know, potentially could be significant contributors to the football team. You know, some starters, some, you know, in today's NFL, the term starter is almost foreign to me, you know, because all these sub-packages – you know, even with defensive linemen in sub packages, if you're going against a team that is going to have three and four receivers on the field the whole time, you're going to have your nickel pass rush group in there in the defensive line. You only have two linebackers out there max, and you know, multiple defensive backs. So you know, it's like the starting 11 is nowhere near the starting 11 that's on the flip card. You know, and it might be that way for 80% of the snaps in that football game. So all of these guys, you know, have shown or want to show that they can make significant contributions to the Bengals in the National Football League, and all of them have the potential and the ability to do it. Will they stay healthy? Will they come back healthy enough? And in some cases, like in Tyler's case, it's like, you know, people start to wonder how many injuries before he's not running the routes like he did, where he could sink his hips, get in on the cuts, you know, a big body guy that can run routes like a wide out. To me, it looks like he's still able to do that. But, you know, you start to wonder as they, number one, age, and then number one, age as well as injury, how big of a toll does it start to take on people?
What will you be looking at when training camp begins under this new coaching staff?
Initially, the O-line. You know, as a former lineman, I'll be looking at that offensive line. I know Coach Turner, Jimmy Turner's got their attention. He is a type of offensive line coach that has got a big presence. He's got every player's attention, that offensive line. Now his task is to establish relationships with the players and trust that comes with the relationships with the players, and then relationships within the players themselves, player-to-player relationships, and the trust that goes along with that. And like we said, potentially, you know, they could be down to projected starters right now, you know, depending on how it were to unfold. Now, we don't know. You can't look in the crystal ball and say the left tackle was going to be Jonah and the left guard was going to be Clint. You don't know that for sure, but there's a damn good chance it could have gone that way, you know, barring injury and retirement because of injury and health issues and all that sort of thing. So that group is going to be interesting to watch. And then I think does the tempo, enthusiasm, esprit de corps, does all that sustain itself, you know, during all through training camp like it did in the mini camps and the OTAs and that sort of thing. And then in the very beginning of the season, you know, they're on the road early. And, you know, you get hit in the mouth on the road. And how will this team respond when they get hit in the mouth? As Tyson has said many times famously, everybody's got a game plan until you get hit in the mouth. So adversity is going to hit. It's a question of when and how will this you know, this young coaching staff and these players, you know, respond to that type of adversity. So there's a lot to look forward to for sure. I always enjoy, you know, training camp, just watching how the team is put together. You know, it's like you have 90 pieces to select from in the beginning. Whittle it down, whittle it down, whittle it down. Why are you whittling it down this way? and what's the thought process, and how is this team going to be put together, and how is it going to compete? It's an interesting process to watch.
Your batteries are recharged. You're ready to go.
I'm ready to rock and roll, stud. Let's do it.
Bengals training camp begins a week from Saturday, July 27th, at Welcome Stadium in Dayton. It starts at 2:30, and that's the first of 10 practices that will be free and open to the public. That's going to do it for this week's podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe. And if you have a minute, please give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback's been helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard. Thanks for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.